and welcome to another episode of Techsplaining. This is Rob, and I'm here with Mark and Brett today. So we're missing Stephanie. So Mark, Happy New Year. Brett, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, guys.
I'll have to step up my game today to take the place of Stephanie, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that I can.
Absolutely.
You got some big shoes to fill.
Are you saying she has big feet?
No, I'm just saying she rocks. Okay. Yeah. So guess what? It's January, and we are about 3 months away from a couple of things, right? The North American Collaboration Summit and the Microsoft MVP Summit.
And getting this podcast published.
Oh yes, that's right. Yes. I do have some time off, so I'm trying to get to it.
I have to give you a hard time about it. It's like the thing I do.
If Stephanie would write some show notes, when she puts the show notes out, that's
all her fault. Since she's not here, it's everything's her fault.
Brett, it's dark there. What time is it?
It is dark here. It's 8:07 p.m. and it gets dark around about 4 at the moment.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's actually nasty getting up in the morning for work again after the Christmas break because it's still this dark at 7 a.m.
Oh no. Yeah. Wow, you live way too far north.
It's a big change from Florida, that's for sure.
So we actually found a there's a direct flight from Nashville to London, and we found there. It looks like they've got a great deal on tickets right now for the October timeframe. So we're thinking about taking a fall break and coming over there. So I've been warning the boys about the temperatures about in October. I'm assuming they're about 40 degrees, 45 degrees. So I told them to just go stand outside right now. It's about what it is right now.
I mean, October can be, without trying to bore everybody, maybe about 50, 55, something like that.
Yeah. That's cool. No, I think it'd be a great trip, and because we were looking to go to New York, and it looks like the price to go to New York is about the same as it would be to go to London.
Wow.
Yeah. So we were like, oh, well, you know, let's go to like a real cool city.
Our kids have a half term from school, so they have a week off in October, so it'd be great.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, yeah.
And then there's me. I can get a direct flight to Atlanta.
And that's the only direct flight.
Yeah, that's the only direct flight I can get. So.
Yeah, so stay tuned on that, Brett. Me and the family might be coming to town. It'd be a lot of fun.
That sounds good. That sounds good. You know, you're always welcome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. I got to come fulfill my mayoral duties in the village.
So I know how we could spend the 7 days. We could teach our kids to code.
We could.
The best lead-in that we've ever had on this show.
What a lead-in, yeah. So I guess that's the topic. We had an interesting, I don't want to call it a debate. It was kind of a discussion, I guess, on a Facebook article that I posted. And Brett, I know you haven't had a chance to read up on it, but Mark, why don't you go ahead and kind of intro the topic since you were one of the more vocal people on the threads.
Instigator, is that the word you're looking for?
The one that everybody disagreed with.
Yes.
I have multiple hats that I wear, and Instigator is one of them, but I learned it from Rob, so you guys can blame him.
Have you seen my foot?
Every night before I close my eyes and go to sleep. So Rob posted this article from Slate by this guy named Joe Morgan. So I'll give him some props before we go into it. And he wrote this article. And it's entitled, "I'm a Developer. I won't teach my kids to code, and neither should you." And so he goes through talking about how you shouldn't teach your kids to write code. You shouldn't teach them syntax. You need to teach them to solve problems. And the example he gave was that he has his small child, and he's teaching them things like how to do exact measurements of baking and making cookies and feeling the difference in the cookie dough based upon the ingredients and teaching them those types of problem solving skills. So they have this basis for solving problems before they start writing code. And, you know, it's not that it's necessarily what he's saying is a bad idea. I like to take exception with things. And the things that I take exception with here is that he is telling you that you should be doing what he's doing. And that totally discounts that all kids learn differently. And what works with one kid may not work with another kid. When my kids were young, there's no way they would have the patience to measure ingredients exactly for baking. I mean, it's just not how their brains made. They would be so frustrated by that they would not, it wouldn't interest them at all. And the other thing that struck me after reading it is, he doesn't know if this is going to work. He's got a tiny kid that he's trying this on. He's being teaching his kid as a guinea pig. And before he even knows if it actually works, he's saying to the world, hey, you all should do this too. So it came off at that point. It's just like, the more I thought about it, the more I thought, this is just dumb. You can't say that everybody should be doing this without even knowing if it's going to work with your kids or not. So that's kind of what started going through my brain when Rob posted this. So I put a status update out there saying that I disagreed with the article, and those are the reasons why.
Okay. So Brett, you've got some young kids. What do you think?
Yeah. So I don't think that every kid needs to learn how to code, and neither would every kid want to know how to code. But we have three kids. We have a 13-year-old. We have our middle one is nearly five, and the other one is nearly three. At the moment, as it stands, he's probably the likeliest to start to learn to code because he seems to be pretty smart. I don't think we just need to talk about coding here. It's about anything. My eldest, she's gone through periods where she's wanted to learn how to do martial arts. She's wanted to do soccer. She's wanted to do golf. She's wanted to do dance. And not all of these things she'll actually stick to. At one point, in fact, if you remember back to the SharePoint pod show days, we all got a Mac. I gave my daughter that Mac. She was playing around with it, and she was probably only about 7 or 8 at the time, and she installed this app that allowed her to build some games. And it was fairly basic, but it was Christmas time, and she managed to add some Christmas trees and a picture of our dog, which was a pug. And basically the pug was bouncing around the screen, and every time it hit a Christmas tree, it yelped. So this is something that she did back then, but ever since then, that was it. She's not really had that much interest in IT or in coding, and it's probably her weakest subject at school, if I'm honest as well. It's not something that she's really all that into. But, you know, you have to expose your kids to different things, and some of those things they'll like and they'll stick to. The one thing that my daughter has stuck to is dance. Yeah, that's the only thing that she really enjoys doing, and she has been doing since she was about 4 years of age, and she enjoys it to this day, and she's in shows and all sorts of things. So that's her thing. She wouldn't really have any interest in coding. But if she did, then she would get my support. if she did have an interest in it, then yeah, maybe a Raspberry Pi and things like that would help her along the way to start writing some code and getting into it. And that, I'm sure, would be a great backup for the sort of thing that she's doing at school.
I was going to say, the thing that concerns me about forcing kids to, not forcing, but strongly encouraging them to learn this stuff is that, you know, if there's not a passion for it, right, then there's not going to be really any movement in that direction. And they could end up hating it, right? And it'll be like, wow, this just sucks. I mean, I know when I was going through, there were specific aspects of the industry that I just didn't want to have any problem with, right? Or anything to do with, or, you know, I didn't want to do it. Or like when I started college, I was a music major. And I got there and I was like, wow, I'm really, really not enjoying this. I don't think I want to do this for a career, right? And I don't think forcing, because I mean, I spent many, many hours up to college, up to university, really planning out to be a music major, to be a band director, to be a trumpet jazz performance major, you know, and really pursue that as a career. And I got to school and I was like, oh, wow, this is kind of what it's about. And there's no money in it. Right? I'm going to be starving for forever. You know, not that I'm doing what I do for the money, but it's a lot better than what I would have done as a struggling trumpet player in Nashville. You know, because there's in the history of trumpet players, there's about 8 of them that have made any money.
If you could play the trumpet and make the same money you're making now, which would you be doing?
honestly, I would do this. I would do what I'm doing now, because I think that the passion I have for music, if it was a job, I think it would kill me on the inside, right? Because you can't. I don't feel that I can bring the musical artistry to the table if I had to do it 10 hours a day, every day, and just keep doing it and doing it. And same thing with being a guitar player or playing in a band. I think it, you know, I was reading an article on The Who, the band The Who, perhaps you've heard of them, but it sounds like that Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey, they don't even talk to each other. You know, they go to a gig and they'll play like the O2 or something amazing, but they don't talk to each other. They don't hang out. They don't have a beer. They go, they do their job, and then they leave. You know, and stuff like that. Just I'm glad I didn't go to that scene, you know. But no, I mean, I think where I tend to agree with the article is that no matter what industry you're going into, coding is just a tool, right? It's just it's a hammer. It's a screwdriver. It's duct tape many times, but it's just a tool, right? I think the key thing that the article hit on was the problem solving aspect of that. And I think teaching kids how to not only solve problems, but work in a group setting, a very diverse group setting to help, you know, receive feedback and really hone in on your ideas and really make them a lot better, I think is far more important than teaching JavaScript or, you know, C++ or whatever.
So yeah, what I do recall at Rio's primary school, which I guess, sorry, you call elementary school, right? So when she was maybe 6 or 7, they were, She came home one day and she showed me this thing on the computer, which was called Scratch. And I don't know if you come across it over in the States, but it's teaching the basics of programming without them actually writing code. They were basically playing around with, you know, properties, methods, and events. They were getting shapes to do stuff. And from the point of view of teaching them the problem solving and the basics without them actually learning syntax.
I mean, that's basically what you're doing. That's basically what you do in Visual Studio today anyway, right?
In fact, so back to my instructor days when I used to teach Visual Basic and I used to teach C# and so on. We had somebody on my class and she was really struggling. And everybody was vetted for their prerequisites and so on. And she said that she was a programmer. She had never, ever, ever used Windows, but she had written code in COBOL. And she was the hardest person to teach anything because she didn't have the concept of a mouse or anything moving on the screen. It was just raw code that she was writing before. So, right. So that was the hardest job I had. In fact, that was almost impossible to teach her how to write Visual Basic.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say once you get into the object-oriented aspect of that, it goes crazy for her. Just blows her mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I think from that point of view, the basics that they can teach at school, you know, they're probably learning what they need to learn at that age. And if there's an interest in it, then just like any subject, they can go forwards with that subject, just like you with music.
Well, what about Marco on yours? Do they have STEM? I'm sure your kids have the STEM, the science, technology, engineering, and math focus stuff in the
school? Yeah, but in Arkansas, STEM means like the end of a plant.
Oh, right, right, yeah. Agricultural states, of course.
I know, yeah, we do have some of that stuff. And that's a good way for kids to get into it. But like, I've got a daughter she's 16, she's a sophomore now, and she loves math and science, but she could care less about writing code. She doesn't want to do it. I've tried to encourage her in that path, and it just doesn't interest her whatsoever. Mm.
Andrew, my oldest, is interested now. He wanted to be a physician. Now I think he's leaning towards engineering. And I'm telling him that he might want to take a look at, because they have to choose a major in high school. They have to go and they have to choose, I think they call it a pathway, but it's basically a major. You have to have a focus area and you have to have so many hours of class in that focus area. And I was telling him, you might want to, if you're looking at engineering, you might want to also look at computer science, because much of what engineering is writing ladder logic code. And you have to really have that logic piece of that down. And I think that might be good for him, but it's kind of something that I don't know. I just there are way more opportunities now in schools than there were, you know, when I was a kid just to learn this stuff.
And so to totally kind of change things a little bit, going off what you said earlier about you starting school as a music major and switching over to engineering, another article I read, well, actually I didn't read the article. I just saw the headline before the article someone posted, was the fact that AI is actually, there's all this fear of AI taking over jobs. And there was this article posted that AI is actually going to create way more jobs than it's actually going to cost. However, those jobs are going to be, you know, taking care of that AI. It's going to be in development. It's going to be in the technology fields for, like, I guess, you know, research, development, creating those sorts of things. So to take this full circle, we started off by saying you shouldn't be teaching every kid to code. But if most of the jobs are going to be something in the coding industry, and you starting your job, your career school with something you're passionate about, but went over to something that you actually pay the bills with, I think that if I can make these thoughts in my head say something coherent, I think over the past generation, there's been a big push for kids to go to school to do what they're passionate about. Don't worry about paying the bills. Do what you're passionate about. I'm of the generation where you go to school to find something that you like to do, but will also pay the bills. I think as we look into the future and we look in the shift to AI, and we do see that there's going to be a huge growth in the technology field, how do we help those children be able to go to school to find, to be able to have jobs after they graduate? Or do we still go down the same path and saying, don't worry about your job, do what you're passionate about and see what happens?
I still don't see that every kid's going to need to grow up to be a technologist. I understand what you're saying, but, you know, there's AI is not going to take over the world. There's still going to be plenty of jobs. Yeah.
I've seen the movies. It's happening.
Well, I mean, there's a lot. There is a common, and Mark, you live in red state America too, but there's a common viewpoint of that basically across many non-college educated folks that, you know, people go to college and they get indoctrinated by liberals with all these ideas and blah, blah, blah. So there's a real, I see it a lot, at least in my Facebook feed among my local friends, is that there's a very anti-college mentality out there. Like as for an example, in my hometown, where I grew up, it's kind of a derogatory thing to go to college. Like people that have a college education and be educated to serve on things like the school boards or the city councils and things like that is like, oh, you know, that's just one of those city boys or city girls. You know, that's not they're not one of us. They're different, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So it doesn't play well in the rest of America. But I think at least on this side, I think you're right, Brett. I don't think everybody, and I would say even ramp as we ramp up into 2030, 2040, you know, I think it's still going to be a very small percentage of people that go into technology, even though there are way more jobs now than we have people going into the field.
But, and I agree with that, but I'm just saying that as you are, how do we as parents best prepare our children for having a future? Do we let them, so based upon our knowledge and our experience and our ability to say that we do see a fruitful future out there if you go in this field, can we somehow find something in this field you're passionate about? Do we try to direct them towards this field? Or do we say, no, you're kind of, you know, we don't have as much experience with other stuff, but go figure it out and do what you're passionate about.
I think you educate your children. It's, you educate them in
but part of educating them is doing is helping them learn from our experience.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily teaching them how to write code.
I'm not talking about writing code. That's not what I'm saying at all. You have not heard me say we should teach them to write code. I'm saying, do we steer them towards where we see the economy going, where we see the jobs growth going, which is a lot in the technology space, and help guide them into something they may enjoy there? Or do we say, oh, you know what? You like playing the trumpet, go play the trumpet.
Of course, but you know, my siblings, if we take my older sister, she was a fantastic artist. And that's what my parents encouraged her to do because that's what she liked to do. And, you know, she ended up as a fashion designer for major clothes manufacturers. I from the day I got my Atari 2600. I liked IT. And, you know, I evolved from one computer to the next and got hand-me-down laptops from my dad's work and things like that. And that's what he encouraged me to do. And as did some of his colleagues as well. So I would be invited into, you know, BP's offices and sit there and play with computers all day long. So yeah, there was the encouragement to encourage your passion. And, you know, my sister couldn't care less about IT still to this day. I mean, she uses Adobe packages and things like that for her design work, but that's about it.
Well, I don't think you're still quite understanding what I'm saying, but I do get what you're saying, because I'm not at all saying that every kid has to learn how to write code or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that. I'm saying at what point do we as parents use our knowledge and understanding to help guide our kids with their future? Or what part do we say it's your future is in your hands and I'm here to support you? And what role do we play in that? And I guess I'm not stating it well enough, because I can see this is the most worked up I've seen Brett in a long time. So I'm not quite stating my side appropriately, I don't think.
I was going to say, at what point though, I mean, because I know what I was like at 17 and my parents could have been like, hey, you know, you really need to like massage these computer skills. I'd be like, no, I'm going to be a musician and that's what I'm going to do. You know, I was not, you know, at some point your kids are going to have to make a decision for themselves. Right. I don't think, you know, and it's going to happen probably between the ages of 16 and 19.
So if Andrew came back to you and said, you know what, I am going to go to college and it's going to cost you $50,000 a year and I'm going to take drama, what would you say?
Oh no. Oh no. There's no way. No, I'm just kidding. I think it would be, I mean, you know, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. You know, I'd be, yeah, first you can't act.
It doesn't matter. It's what he's passionate about. You can't tell him he can't do that.
I don't know. It's easier in the UK, isn't it, Brett? Because university is fairly free. It's mostly free, right?
There you go. Well, let's get into that subject. Yeah.
Let's open up that can of worms.
I don't know. I think I do think that I would support that. I do.
You are so full of crap. I can smell you from here.
I do think it would be very hard. It would be very hard to support it, but I like to think that I would. Now, to go or not to go, right? I think there's a point there to where I would rather him go and major in drama as not go, right? Okay. You know, and I know that many kids don't. Many kids choose to go directly into manufacturing jobs or, you know, into factories and things like that. We need that. We need welders. We need you know, technicians. We need electricians. We need all of this stuff. I think that the opportunities are better if you go not only to college, but to college and major in something that is related to science, technology, engineering, and math. You know, I think that's where the job opportunities are coming in, and even the medical field, right? I mean, if you want to spend that much time and effort doing that, but I think STEM is really kind of where, if you're going to go to college, that's where the focus should be. And we need artists, we need musicians, we need this stuff, but there's not going to be, it's going to be harder to be sustainable, you know, on your own if you major in that. Now, that being said, I kind of wish I would have gotten a degree in psychology, because that's largely what I do these days is psychology stuff. And you know, instead of computer science or whatever. But you know, to each their own. I don't know.
Yeah. And to go back to the whole college story, I guess it depends on what you want to do with your life there as well. If you know, when we look at hiring a developer for our company, I don't care if they have a degree or not. I care, can they do the job? Mm-hmm. You know, and if you go to college, that gives me some comfort level that you have some skills, right? So, but if you've got five years of real world experience and can show me some things, that actually gives me a little more comfort. So depending on what you want to do with your life, I think college can give you a shorter path to get there, but I don't think it's necessarily necessary depending on what you want to do.
So now we're talking about hiring.
Yeah.
Now, I think, you know, that is something you can definitely teach your children is because there's certainly foundation skills that kids need to have in any role that they're going to have in any form of professional career. And when it comes to hiring, wow, you know, when you are trying to hire, you see some people that don't have those skills, and that's something that I think schools should really be focusing on now.
That's a fantastic point. And I have a story to go with that. So my daughter, again, who's a sophomore, she's a smart girl, love her to death. Of course she's my daughter. I'm kidding. Anyway, she is applying to a school here in Arkansas called, it's like the Arkansas School for Math and Sciences. It is a school in Hot Springs, Arkansas. I think it's in the top 10 in the nation.
High school?
It is a high school for 11th and 12th grade, and she has to live on campus to go there. But she has to get accepted. They get like 500 people submitting a year, and they accept like 150. And this is like extremely important to her. She's taken the ACT multiple times to get her scores up higher and higher. She's trying to, this is just something she's very passionate about this. And one of the things she has to do is go through an interview process to get in the school. So I've been trying to help her build some of those interview skills, like hiring for a job, telling her, this is what I want to see in somebody when I hire them for a job. Here's how I want them to respond. I want a level of humility, but a level of confidence. I don't want you telling me why those other kids don't deserve to be there and you do. I want to know what sets you apart and why you are, trying to tell them what to focus on. It's skills just to hear her talk about it, that if I just set her loose to doing there, I don't think she would have done fantastic because she doesn't have those skills. So I absolutely agree with that is something we can teach our kids, that they can start taking advantage of for things like college interviews, school interviews, and anything like that. So I couldn't agree more.
I had the same thing with Andrew when he went through the his thing at his high school for the collegiate academy. And it was the same thing. By the time he got to the interview, he made it through all of my interviews with him, and I was teaching him, okay, that's a great answer, but maybe you should focus in these four or five things. By the time he got to the interview, I was like, well, how was it? He was like, it was much easier than yours, Dad. But that's good though, right? Because you really need to, it's those type of soft skills. Much of what I do on the job, I've learned on the job, right? I didn't learn it in college. I didn't do that. I mean, but a lot of that is, like you said, knowing the skills on how to actually land the job and not lie about it, but just right. Like you said, have the confidence to convince them that you're the right person, that you are a different, something different that they want to hire.
And well, businesses are getting smarter about the way they hire as well. And yeah, I think that's something that's probably changed a lot in the time where, you know, we just had one or two interviews and that was it. You may have got selected, you may have got looking for a job. I think now there's a lot of systems in place that businesses have to hire people. Stephanie was actually on a presentation with me just the other day. It's an online presentation about a book called Who, and that was quite an eye opener about how businesses are going about hiring now. Completely different to like I say, just a couple of interviews. There's some really good techniques in hiring people that they should be made aware of.
Any hints you can give on this?
No, I think some pretty cool things were. You know, just like the very initial conversation when you first put an advertisement out for a job is you're attracting people to your business, and to basically get everybody into one room and present to them what the job is, what the role entails, what the vision of the company is, and so on, and then effectively ask those that are still interested in the position to stay behind, and the other ones, if it's not for you, go. And then you've got, you know, actually a pool of people that are still interested in the job. And then you can start asking them questions about what interests them in the position, as opposed to inviting somebody in. And what I've had firsthand experience of is inviting people in for an interview, and it's almost a showstopper when you ask them straight away, what do you know about lighting tools? And, you know, they've not been on the website, they don't know anything about it. and you're just wasting your time and theirs. But yeah, it goes into depth into the types of questions that you would ask, and really what those interviewers are looking to get from the potential employees. So it's quite a good book to take a look at.
So basically, there's a ton of skills that we need to be teaching our kids. That's what I'm hearing, and I think that's great. Another skill that my daughter's had to really learn because of this whole process of going to the school, she has to write a series of essays. And she's been like reading me her essays, and I've been able to kind of, again, help her look at this from a different point of view. One of them that she's really been struggling with is she wants to know, they want to know something, an obstacle in their life that they've had to overcome and how it made them a better person. And she looked at me and she's like, I haven't had any obstacles in my life.
I'm 16, Dad. I don't know.
But I'm like telling her, like, that's a great story. I mean, the story is that, you know what, you have had obstacles. Look at, you know, you've had people close to you die. You've had, you've had some rough times at school. You can actually write your essay and say that, look, I've had some things happen to me, sure, but I don't think I've had anything that I've had to struggle with. And I think this school would be an excellent opportunity for me to actually have a challenge that meets my expectation or something like that. I mean, so I get to help her kind of write an essay that I would want to read. I want to bring that person in. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of schools that can be teaching skills, we can be teaching our kids to prepare them for the future. And none of it has to do with coding. Mm-hmm.
No, that's right. Yeah, that's that's a good one. That, you know, and stuff like that, I think, will help them think about, because that's a great kind of scenario based question that you could get answered in an interview. It's not that specifically, but something to where you have to like dig deep and think on the fly, right? To where if they're asking you, what have you struggled with in your life, and why are you here, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's one of those questions that I typically ask in interviews. It's like that style of to where there's no right or wrong answer, right? But how you answer the question really tells me a lot about how you think.
I think there's a great question that's covered in that book, and it's along the same lines. It's and it's the way that it's worded. But the question is, when I speak to your boss or your previous boss, how are they going to rate you? And so it's like, whoa, I don't want to ever get asked that question.
Yeah.
Because it's not if, it's when I speak to your boss.
Wow.
So, you have to be open and honest, right? There.
Yeah.
I'll have to remember that one.
Read the book.
That's a good one, actually. Make you sweat a little bit on that one. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So I guess what we're saying here is that there are things that you should teach your kids, right? Those things are the soft skill kind of how to solve problems, how to work with people, how to think on the fly, interview skills, things like that. Now, if coding is involved in that and there's a passion of there, by all means, you know, stoke that fire. But if it's not, those other skills, you can, no matter what they decide to go into, can really help shape their direction in life.
I agree. And I think the key to it is finding something that your kids are passionate about and they care about. Again, going back to my daughter and writing these essays and wanting to get on these interviews and wanting to do good on the ACT, she could care less about that if it was just because she needs an ACT score to go to college someday. That's not what her passion is, but she wants to go to this school and she knows that she needs a better ACT score than those 350 other applicants in order to get in there. So she cared enough to dig in. I mean, I'm going to brag on her again. She's a sophomore. She made a 29 on the ACT. I mean, that's pretty good.
That's very high. That's very high
for a sophomore. And so I'm very proud of her, but it's because she cared enough to go in and actually dig down and actually figure that stuff out. So I think getting your kids passionate about something, even if it's drama or music, but seeing how you can use that to help them with these other soft skills.
And I think you've got to be prepared for at least, my oldest, like I say, she's just turned 13. So there's been times where we're fully behind her. We're investing in golf clubs because she, for the last 12 months, has been interested in playing golf. And then you buy her a set of golf clubs and then she doesn't want to play anymore.
I've got the key there. I did the same. My son was the same way. We'd buy him things all the time and he would lose interest. And I got to the point where I'm like, I'm not going to buy that $300 bow and arrow because you're going to lose interest in it in 3 months. I'm not going to do it. But he's finally to the age where he can make money now. And so it's like, if it's that important to you, save up the money and buy it yourself. And that has really forced him to think about, how important is this to me? Am I willing to pay the money, the money that I earned for that? And that's really helped a lot. So I know she's not quite there age wise yet, but that's something you can look forward to that someday, knowing that you can put it back on her someday.
And Rob just has to tell his kids, hey, do you know that Mark Rackley? He's a really good coder. And then all of a sudden you'll be second best.
Yeah. Will is a competitor. That's for sure. He is a competitor. Well, and now I did buy a fairly expensive trumpet for Andrew recently. And, but the deal was, he's had this student horn since he started in sixth grade. And he went up through and now he's in high school. And I said, all right. And I said, when you go to high school and you start playing and you really enjoy it, if you make first chair in high school, the best out of the band, whatever, I'll buy you a silver trumpet. And so, professional line horn. And I was like, oh, I've got, it's a huge high, there's 31 trumpets, it's a huge high school. Well, sure enough, first semester of his freshman year, he's right at the top. So I had to eat my words fairly quickly and go buy him a silver horn. But he earned it, right? So he worked for it. He's he put in the hours. He plays 5 and 6 hours a day and all this kind of stuff. So he does put in the hours and work for it. It's not like that I just went and bought him and then he's like, what? This horn thing's just not for me. which is a very good thing. So that's what you need to do, Brett. Maybe you can say, all right, Rio, if you start shooting par on the golf course, then I'll buy you a set of golf clubs.
There you go.
Motivation.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Goals, life lessons there, life lessons.
Yep.
Yeah. So what else?
I think I'm argued out at the moment. Give me something else to argue about.
We've been going 44 minutes. Let's wrap it up.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks everybody for joining us. I hope that you found our conversation interesting. Maybe took away some nuggets for things you can do with your kids, or maybe you totally disagree with us, especially opinionated people like me. And if so, let us know. Send us an email at info@techsplitting.net and tell me that you think I'm a moron. I'm open to hearing about it. I hear it every other day. So today should be no exception. But thank you for joining us. And we will talk to you guys soon.
Yeah, before we close out, I wanted to kind of shout out to Jim Bob Howard, Spencer Harbor. Who else was on that thread?
Matt Bremer,
Gary Bushy, Philip Wheat. And actually, we had on the thread on Facebook, we actually had a local teacher weigh in to talk about how she needs to kind of shape this to teach her students. So that's Sarah Easterly. So thanks everybody for jumping in and kind of stoking this discussion. I think it's a discussion we all need to have, and we all need to take back and start really applying it to our kids' lives.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. And we will come to you again soon with another show.
Ciao.